Good morning. I'm Chris Vandercook at 8:34. You're listening to The Conversation on statewide member-supported HPR2, Hawaii Public Radio. You can get in touch with us through our talkback line at 808-792-8217 or our Facebook page on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation or on Twitter at HI Conversation. Email is talkback at hawaiipublicradio.org. And coming up, murder and espionage against the background of territorial days.
Most Tuesdays, we talk with news analyst Neil Conan about politics and the international news. This is one of those days where there is really only one story as we struggle with the shock and grief and anger from the worst mass shooting in our history and begin to come to terms with what it all means. Good morning, Neil, and it's good to have you here.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
One of the problems with this atrocity in Orlando is that so many people are talking about it in so many different ways, and we all seem to be having trouble defining exactly what happened. What do you see?
Yeah, Orlando lies at the intersection of homophobia and lone wolf terrorism. It's not like Fort Hood or San Bernardino. It's not like Sandy Hook or Aurora. We simply can't ignore the fact that this happened at a gay nightclub. Lots of other things are involved here, I think, but first and foremost, it seems to me, this was homophobic rage.
In the phone calls with the police, though, the shooter pledged his support for ISIS. Isn't that an important fact to remember, too?
Sure, but if you listen to everything he said, it's all over the map. He pledged allegiance to ISIS, yes, but in the past, he's also supported an al-Qaeda group and Hezbollah. These three groups are bitter enemies. Support for one automatically excludes the others. So there's no religious or ideological consistency here. At one point, he called the Sarnaev brothers his homies. Those, of course, are the men who set off bombs at the Boston Marathon a couple of years ago. But, you know, even that doesn't seem consistent to me. An attack on a major event like the Boston Marathon is clearly an attack on the United States, a retaliation, however misguided, for American foreign policy. The Pulse nightclub is not that. This is homophobic rage, you know, maybe dressed up in religious rationalization, but fundamentally homophobic rage.
The Islamic State, though, has claimed Omar Mateen as one of its own.
Well, you know, there doesn't seem to be anything too vile for the Islamic State as long as it involves the blood of its enemies, and the more the better. Two things. It's important to point out that most of those enemies are Muslims. Shias, yes, but you know, loads of Sunni Muslims, too. And the vast majority of the people it's killed are in places like Baghdad and Beirut, not to mention, you know, it has bloody-minded affiliates in places like Nigeria and Libya. The other point is that there's absolutely no evidence that Mateen was in contact with anybody from ISIS, and that earlier FBI investigation found that his claims to be, you know, some kind of, you know, radical, we're, you know, phony, just posing.
If you say, though, that, the, you know, the heart of this attack is really homophobia, some would also say that you could trace that back to the shooter's faith, to the utter rejection of homosexuality in the Quran. Doesn't that hold some weight, too?
Yeah, but, you know, the Quran doesn't have exactly a monopoly on that. The Old Testament is just as harsh. You know, there's lots we still don't know, but I suspect at the base we will find a homophobe. Now, that is often linked the men who are unable to deal with their own homosexuality. There are reports we're seeing today that Mateen had been seen before at the Pulse nightclub, you know, apparently trying to pick up men. We don't know that for sure, but, you know, I think that's what is going to be at the base of this.
All right, exactly, and hearing a lot of that speculation today. But let's talk about the reaction to the attack. Unlike 9/11, unlike the Boston Marathon, this attack does not seem to have unified people.
No. No, it hasn't. And part of that, I think, is that we're in election mode, and part of that is due to the extraordinary response of Donald Trump. You know, just a week ago, he'd been restrained by the revulsion within the Republican Party to his wild attacks on a federal judge. He came close to an apology. He started to read speeches off teleprompters. Now, that's been cast aside as he's congratulated himself, or as he put it, being right. He doubled down on his idea to ban Muslims from entering the country. He said that should be expanded to include anybody from countries involved with terrorist attacks on Americans. He didn't really define how that would work. He insinuated that President Obama and Hillary Clinton were somehow enabling these attacks. He issued a bunch of outright lies and distortions. So, you know, that mask of presidential demeanor just slipped right back off.
This bluster and the Muslim ban in particular still played pretty well for Trump in the Republican primaries, and some folks think that this could help him to be the victor in the general election too, and that in this case Omar Martin might have just ushered Donald Trump into the White House.
You know, I don't think so. This might get him a bump in the polls. We're going to have to see about that. But in the long run, what we've seen in these past couple of days is Trump defiant. He's thrown off all the restraints. Again, he's seized by that certainty that unbridled, unscripted Trump will conquer all. Now, he did speak yesterday from a teleprompter, but strayed way off script. Now, this might work on this issue for this week, but in the long run, he will expose himself over and over again and drive people away. Now, by contrast, Secretary Clinton's speech was sympathetic, cautious, full of policy points on plans to attack ISIS. And some would say she got swamped by Trump's bombast that he won the news cycle. Short-run success, maybe. But, that sense that he's dangerous, out of control, incoherent, that's going to hurt him over time. Now, just to point out, in the middle of this, Trump blacklisted the Washington Post for a headline he didn't like. Now, there have been, lots of candidates and politicians who didn't like the press in general or specific outlets in particular. But, Richard Nixon didn't lift the Post credentials during Watergate. He didn't ban the New York Times or the White House press office when it published the Pentagon Papers. And again, in the short run, Trump may get some points for bashing the media. But this is Trump living down to that image that Hillary Clinton skewered so deftly in her speech a couple of weeks ago and over the long, long haul of the next 6 months. I don't think it's going to play.
All right. Well, we're talking long hauls here, just to shift briefly. The very last Democratic primary happens today in Washington, D.C. Bernie Sanders got clobbered last week in New Jersey and California. He lost two other states as well, but he didn't end his campaign then. He didn't end it when the Vice President, Elizabeth Warren, endorsed Hillary Clinton. Is tonight the night?
He says no, that he plans to stay in the race all the way to the convention floor. But, this is just a formality at this point. It looks like that steady torrent of small contributions that sustained him for so long has largely dried up. Staffers said that California came as a surprise, for example, because the campaign didn't have the money to poll in California the last couple of weeks. At least half the campaign staff has been laid off. Sanders hopes to leverage an endorsement for influence at the convention and for influence on the shape of the Democratic Party to come. And those two things, that's politics. That ought to be doable. And both he and I think the vast majority of his supporters are going to be ready to join the fight against Donald Trump.
Well, I know you're going to be traveling next Tuesday, so when we talk again, I know we'll have lots more to talk about. Have safe travels. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Okay, you bet, Beth.
News analyst Neil Conan joins us most Tuesdays from the farm, and you can also hear his Pacific News Minutes right here on Hawaii Public Radio.